Morning. Today's daf in Baba Basra's Nun Ches. We are on the very top of Nun Ches Amud Aleph. We are continuing from yesterday's Gemara. The Gemara discussed a couple of statements by Rabbi Bana. Rabbi Bana starts on Nun Zayin Amud Beis. Comes up in the context of our Gemara because our Gemara is discussing rights and assume rights that people have in Shur courtyards. And the Gemara quotes a statement by Rav Yochanan quoting in the name of Rabbi Bana that when it comes to shutfas, when it comes to a partnership and there's a shared courtyard, so Ma'akvin says this. So really they can prevent one another from doing activities in the courtyard. It's a common courtyard and therefore you can't do your own private activities in the courtyard, however, with one notable exception, and that's kvisa, the laundering. Laundering can be done in a courtyard because we do not expect and nor do we want Benos Yisrael to go do laundry out by the river. It's going to put them in an inappropriate position where they're going to be exposing themselves out in public, and we don't want that. So therefore, we can force the members of the courtyard to allow the women to do laundry in the courtyard itself. So that was one statement by Rabbi Bana. And then the Gemara, as long as the Gemara was on topic, so the Gemara stayed on Rabbi Bana. I mentioned yesterday that he's an early Amora, he's very early Amora. Rav Yochanan is quoting him, and there's dialogue between him and Rav Yochanan. So he's one of the first generation Amoraim out of Eretz Yisrael. But outside of that, I don't know. I don't know any. His name doesn't surface much throughout Shas. And today's almost an entire day dedicated to him. And some of the agarata that revolves around him are going to be unforgettable, as we're going to be seeing over the course of today. So it's a day dedicated to an Amora that we don't spend a lot of time with in Shas. The Gemara quoted also yesterday in Rabbi Bana that he was describing how a Talmid Chacham should present himself. Talmid Chacham obviously is a representation of a Kadosh Baruch Hu in this world, and he needs to represent himself accordingly. And so the Gemara says that his chaluk has to go all the way down, and the chaluk is the inner robe that they used to wear, and and on top of that, the talus that he wears on top of that has to also go all the way down as well. Okay, so he has to be dressed appropriately, and he's got to present himself. Then we discuss the shulchan of a Talmid Chacham. So again, Rabbi Bana teaches us that the shulchan of the Talmid Chacham has to be organized. 2/3 of it covered, 1/3 of it uncovered, exactly what that means. So I tried to give a description yesterday using the Rashbam. And then we discussed the hook on the table, okay, whether it should be on the outside or the inside. Again, a little bit difficult to understand. The picture over here would be invaluable to me in terms of understanding the Gemara. We're on the very top of Nun Ches Amud Aleph, and again, we're contrasting what the house of a Talmid Chacham would look like versus that of an Ama Aretz. So, Mita Shel Talmidei Chacham, in the very top line of Nun Ches Amud Aleph, this is where we left off yesterday, and we pick it up. What about the bed of a Talmid Chacham? So, Ketzer, Kol She'ein Tachteha Ela Sandalim, B'yemosa Chama Menalim, B'yemosa Gshamim. So, if you look under the bed of a Talmid Chacham, so you're going to find shoes. Sandalim in the summer and Minalim in the winter months. Right, Minalim are covered because it's colder and wet and you want more protection for your feet, and the summertime is hot, so you want a little bit of breathing room, so you have you're wearing sandals. However, Shalama Aretz Dama La'otzer Balom, but when it comes to the Ama Aretz and you look underneath his bed, so it is just it's a storehouse down there. It's a heaping mess. Very disorganized. Okay, what is the issue of things under the bed? So again, I'm going to quote a lot of Rashbams today, which is, you know, what I'm supposed to do in the third parak of Baba Basra. So the Rashbam says, Kol She'ein Tachteha, take a look at the second Rashbam on the Amud. And he writes, Kol She'ein Tachteha, Damrinim B'Psachim, so he quotes the Gemara in Psachim. This is in the 10th parak, Ochlim Tacha, Samita, Afilu, Mechupim B'Kli, Barzel, Ruach Ra, Shara Lehim. So there is something, there is a Ruach Ra that gets into food that's kept under the bed, and even if it's protected, and even if it's Kli Barzel, if it's an iron lid and an iron container, it doesn't matter. So there's a Ruach Ra. So therefore, there should be no food under the bed. But the shoes, however, so that's fine. That's acceptable. But basically, nothing else should be under the bed. Or at least what we could say definitively is there should be no food under the bed. Okay, so that's the and contrast that with the Ama Aretz, who's got basically a whole storehouse under his bed. I don't know, snacks if you will. But okay, that's the Rashbam's explanation of what why Talmid Chacham should have his bed free of anything underneath. And also, we could just simply say it's a function of organization, meaning consistent with what the Gemara mentioned yesterday, that the that a Talmid Chacham in general should just simply be more kept, more organized, and that's just simply the nature of a Talmid Chacham. Rabbi Banan, we're continuing in the Gemara, we're four lines down, and the Gemara now tells us the following incident, have a Kamisayim Ma'arta. So what he would do is he would make it Tzion. Tzion is a mark, right? The as the Navi described Tziunim, so it is marks around the grave so that people don't step directly over the grave. And what he would do is he would mark up graves. In other words, now the Gemara here describes Marasa, it's a cave, and as we're going to see in just a moment, it's Marasa Machpela. Not just any cave, but the cave, the one in Hebron. But the... But in general, the way it works is that people were buried in a cave. Now, the way Tumah works, the Tumah goes up and down. So if you're walking on top of the cave, so you don't really know where the Tumah is, meaning because when you're going into the cave, you know where the bodies are buried, but when you're on top of it, you don't know. So what he was doing is basically surveying the cave so that he knows where the bodies are buried, and so then he's going to go to the top of the cave, and he's going to mark off where these bodies are buried from a Tumah standpoint so that no Kohen were to go on top of the on top of the cave. So this is what he was doing. And Rabbi Bana goes into the cave. Now the Rashbam over here makes a very interesting comment. Rashbam in Divrei Maschil Rabbi Bana Adam Gadav Chashav Haya. So he was a great man, meaning Rabbi Bana. And Lafichach Nitein Lo Rishus Likanis BeKivrei Tzadikim. And as a result of that, he was allowed to go to Kivrei Tzadikim. Ava Acher Lo. But somebody who is not a great man should not go to Kivrei Tzadikim. Now I don't think the Rashbam means like in the context of, you know, we visit Kivrei Tzadikim, meaning we're not. We're on the ground, we're on top. We're talking about going into the cave. So I'm not 100% sure what I'm saying is correct, but I think this Rashbam, his comment is limited to going into the cave itself. That's the impression I get. Again, I could be wrong, but that's the impression I get. The Rashbam quotes the Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin says that tzaddikim are greater in their death than they are when they're alive. And like I explained just a moment ago, but it's because I knew the Rashbam, and what he would do is he would measure on the inside, and by measuring on the inside, he would then be able to ascertain where the tumah goes up, like I mentioned previously. V'asa sham tzion sid kedei lahakir makam atumah v'lo yavo taros derech kan shelo ya'il ad hakever. Fine. So and it prevents people or objects from becoming tummy. Fine. Okay, back to the Gemara. So have a kametzayim marata kimata lamarasa d'Avram. So now he's up to the cave of Avram. In other words, he's marasa machpela. So ashkechel Eliezer eved Avram dekai kame bava. So who is at the doorway? So Eliezer is at the doorway. Eliezer was serving Avram when Avram was alive, and Eliezer continues to serve Avram as well. So is Eliezer dead? So the impression you get from our Gemara is that he's not dead. Again, how to understand all this in the context of, you know, it
could be a dream.
Okay, now all this could be a dream, and the Arma Farshim who say that all this was a dream. I'm going to explain the Gemara Kipshuto, the simple pshat of the Gemara, and I turn once again back to the Rashbam. The Rashbam says, "Ashkechel Eliezer, detanya b'maseches derech eretz." So the Rashbam quotes a Gemara maseches derech eretz, one that we don't learn in the daf. The shivat tzaddikim kayamim shalom esu. So there are seven tzaddikim who did not experience death, and v'kachashiv, and one of them that's considered bahadayu together with the others is Eliezer Eved Avram. So Eliezer Eved Avram was a great man. I mean, we knew that, but when we say great, we mean he's now in an exclusive club of people who never died. So Eliezer was there at the entrance of the cave. Amar Leh, back to the Gemara, Micah Ovid Avraham. So what is Avraham doing right now? So Amar Leh, Gana Beknafa de Sarah. So he's sitting basically in the lap of Sarah, the Kama'ina Liberation, and she is investigating his hair, looking at his head. Okay, so it's a powerful visualization that the Gemara is providing over here, and really an intimate one in which Avram and Sarah are still together. So Amar Leh, back to the Gemara, Zil Emalai Benakai Abava. So he says, look, I don't want to intrude on them right now. So tell them that Bana, meaning myself, is at the doorway, and I'd like to come in. I want to measure. I want to again, he's marking up the graves. So Amar Le Leo. So the response was, no, you can go in right now. Meaning that even though they're affectionate to one another, but it's okay, you can go in right now. So you know that the Yetzer Hara Bahai Alma in that world, so it doesn't exist. So what exactly does that mean? Again, the Rashbam over here, Lotz Rechina Litzinu Minei. Meaning, we don't need tznius once they moved on to the other world. Meaning, and I saw the Mefarshim pick up on this, not in the daf, but off the daf, Nimuki Yosef is quoted. Say that in this world, meaning, so we have a Yetzer Hara, so even husband and wife, so they have to conduct themselves in a modest way, and they're not allowed to have public affection in this world. But once you move on to the other world, so then husband and wife can be affectionate, and they don't have to be as private about it. Now, in other words, when you move on to the other world, it won't have any application to you and I. We don't have any type of confrontation with people in the other world. But in this world, however, Nimuki Yosef says that a husband and wife shouldn't show public affection. It's only because Avram and Sarah moved on to the next world, so they can still continue to show public affection. So Ayel, so he goes in, so Rabbi Bana goes in, Ayin Venafak. So he did his investigation, meaning he wanted a survey, he wanted to know where the bodies are buried, and then he left. Okay, so we have now Rabbi Bana in the Maris of Machpelah measuring Avram and Sarah in order to ascertain in terms of where exactly they are buried so that he can mark the graves. And just an interesting, powerful imagery the Gemara gives us over here regarding Avram and Sarah and the position they were in. Kimata Lamaras Adam Arishon. So now he wants to move into the cave of Adam Arishon. So again, he's in Maris of Machpelah. We know there are four couples buried in Maris of Machpelah, and of course Adam and Chavur are buried there as well. So now he wants to look at the cave of Adam Arishon, and again, do the same thing. Right, measure where the bodies are buried, so he can go on the top of the cave and mark off the area of Tumah. Yatsa Baskov Amran Istakelas B'demus Diyukni. So B'Diyukni Atzma Al Tistakel. So the Baskol comes down. The Baskol says, "Look, you want to look at the Demus Diyukni. You want to look at some sort of visualization of." Of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so you can look at the Musti Yukni. You can look at something which is beautiful. Now Rashbam over here points out that it's a reference to Yaakov Avinu. We are going to see later in our Gemara that Yaakov Avinu was considered a beautiful human being. He was a shade of Adam Harishon. Okay, the Gemara is going to say that later on. So he says, if you want to look at Yaakov Avinu, so fine, so that's fine. But b'diyukni atzma al tistakel, but you cannot look at the image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Torah tells us that when Adam HaRishon was created, he was created b'tzelem Elokim, in the image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now again, what does that mean? I can only begin to understand, and not even that. In other words, obviously it's hard to wrap my head around exactly what that means. But right. But in other words, Tzelem Elokim, he was in the image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you can't, meaning the Baskol came out and said to Rabbi Bana, you can't look at Adam HaRishon. So he's B'diyukni. He's in the image, and therefore you can't look at him. Now obviously those who were living in the same generation of Adam HaRishon, obviously they got a glimpse. But after that, that's it. In other words, once Adam HaRishon died, so you can't look at him. So Habi Ina Litziyuna Marata Kamida Sachitzona. Kach midas hapanimis. So the Gemara says, so fine. So in other words, and what's your purpose over here? Your purpose is to measure. You basically got it. Meaning you were out in the outer cave. Remember, Maris HaMachpelah was a double cave. That's why it's called Machpelah, from the word kefel, double. So it's a double cave. Now the Gemara in Erevin, the Rashbam here quotes it, says that there's a debate exactly what it means double, exterior, interior, or one on top of another. But the Gemara now points out either way in this context, look, Rabbi Bana, you basically got it. You got the idea? Meaning you know where Avram and Sarah are buried in the outer cave. So basically, what you'll do is you'll estimate the same thing for the inner cave as well. Or Ulamanda Amishne Batam Zelamalamizu, Kimita Sayona, Kachmita Satachtona. And if you go with the opinion that the Maris HaMachpelah was one on top of another, not interior, exterior, but one over the other, so again, you got the basic idea of what the top one looks like, so now you'll know what the bottom looks like as well. So, Amar Rabbi Bana. So Rabbi Bana says, fine, so I won't go into see Adam Arishon, Nistakalta Mishne Akevav. But the one thing that he was able to see was the two heels of Adam Arishon, Vidoma Mishne Gagalechama, and they gave off the kind of illumination that the sun gives off. Okay. Okay. I'm not going to pretend like I totally understand these Agadatas, but certainly the ideas that the Agadatas convey over here, and these powerful imagery and the significance of Adam Arishon and Avram Avinu. So and as we'll see in just a moment, Yaakov Avinu. So certainly it's very powerful imagery. Hakol b'fnei Sar Kekof, anyone relative to Sarah basically looks like a monkey. Meaning, Sarah is so beautiful; she was a sight to behold, and basically, it's hard to compare anyone against Sarah. So, Bifnei Adam, Sarah Bifnei, I'm sorry, Bifnei Sarah Kikof Bifnei Adam. Fine. So you can't compare anyone to Sarah. But Sarah Bifnei Chava Kikof. But again, everything's relative, and you put up Sarah against Chava, and Sarah looks like a monkey. Again, in the context of just not as beautiful as Chava. Now, I'm sorry, Kikof Bifnei Adam. Chava Bifnei Adam. Now put up Chava against Adam. Kikof Bifnei Adam. Okay, just fascinating. So you put up Chav against Adam, and again, Adam is just simply a more perfected, more beautiful individual. Adam bifnei Shechina, Kikof bifnei Adam. Now put Adam against the Shechina again. Relatively speaking, Adam can't compare to that of the Shechina. Okay, Shufra de Rav Kahana, Me'ein Shufra de Rabbi Abahu. Okay, the Gemara should sound familiar. We did the Gemara back in Bab Metzia. The Gemara here now focuses on beauty. Obviously, beauty has a certain virtue to it. There is something to be said about it. And the Gemara clearly has something to say about it. The beauty of Rav Kahana is Me'ein Shufra de Rabbi Abahu is that, I'm skipping the parentheses, is like that of the beauty of Rabbi Abahu. Shufra de Rabbi Abahu, Me'ein Shufra de Yaakov Avinu. The Rabbi Abahu is shades of beauty of Yaakov Avinu. Shufra de Yaakov Avinu, Shufra de Adam Arishon. Me'ein Shufra de Adam Arishon. And Yaakov is beauty, is has shades of Adam Arishon. And again, now going back to the dialogue that took place in Maris HaMach, so that's what was told to Rabbi Bana. Meaning, you want to see Adam Rishon, you can't. You want to see something like Adam Rishon? Okay, so you take a look at Yaakov Avinu. Okay, there was a magician, right? The word Amgusha is a magician. In fact, if you think about the letters in the word, the English word magician and the way the Gemara says it is basically the same. So there was a magician. And Havichate Shachve, and he would dig up the graves of those that were dead. I guess in order to practice his sorcery, his magic. So this was part of his deal, so to say. The Rashbam over here gives us a detail. He would dig up the graves, and he would strip them of their clothing. Okay, again, what's going on over here? So probably it's my lack of understanding of magic and how magic works is why I don't understand what's going on right now, but that's fine. So, but anyway, that's what he did. Kimata Amarasa Rav Tuvi Bar Masna. So he got to the grave of Rav Tuvi Bar Masna. So Tafsin Bidiukne. So as he was trying to take the clothing off of Rav Tuvi, now clothing over here probably means Tachrichin, meaning I assume he got a traditional burial. So anyway, so Rav Tuvi then grabbed onto the beard of the magician. Okay, this is a nice horror story to tell over, but he grabbed onto the beard of the magician. Asa Abaye Amale. So Abaye intervenes on behalf of the magician. Amale, b'matusi minach, I beg of you. Shavke. So leave him, meaning let him go. In other words, and I guess I'm adding right now, the Gemara doesn't say this, but Abaye basically saying, and I'll try to talk to him and I'll tell him not to do this again. Okay, but that's me just adding a little bit. L'shana achrita, now in the next year, hader ase tafse b'diakne. So the next year, so this magician is back up to his old tricks, and he did not learn his lesson. And again, he was digging in the grave, and Rav Tuvia grabbed his beard as the magician was trying to rob him of his clothing. So also Abaye lo shavke. Now Abaye comes. Now Abaye now knows that. Look, I spoke to the magician last year, and I gave him basically a warning not to do this again. He did it again. So lo shavke ad aisi mispara vegazil diakne. And the would not let go until basically he got scissors and had to cut off the beard of the magician. And the Gemara leaves the story, lets the story go now.
I don't know.
Obviously, there's tremendous depth to the story, and I don't know. Hahud Amalu Chavita de Afra Lechad Barai, Chavita de Garma Lechad Barai, and Chavita de Udra Lechad Barai. Okay. Gemara now is going to tell another story regarding Rabbi Bana, and it really speaks to the Chachmas HaAmara. In other words, he was a great Amara, and he was very smart, and on top of that, he had a tremendous amount of what we would call common sense, meaning he was just intuitive, he was able to figure things out, and the Gemara tells the following incident. We're right in the middle of Nunches Amud Aleph, halfway down the page, where the line starts with the words V'gazil Diakne. So how would Amalei Chavita Da'afra Lechad Barai? So it was a person who was dying, and he said, I want to give a jug of dirt to one of my sons, Chavita De'Garmi Lechad Barai, and I want to give a jug of bones to another one of my sons, and Chavita De'Udra Lechad Barai, and I want to give a jug of cotton or fabric to another one of my sons. So, and this is what he said as his last will and testament. This was his Sava before this man died. Lo Haviyad Damai Ka'amar Lehu. So, and everyone's looking around, and nobody's understanding what the old man just said. We're all lost. So, also the comment to Rabbi Bana. So they call in Rabbi Bana, Amr Lahu, and he says to them, to the sons, Yisrachu Ara. So he says, okay, well, let's take a look at the estate. Is there property in the estate, Amr Layin? Yisrachu Chiyuse? Are there animals as part of the estate in? So the answer once again is yes. Yisrachu Bestarke? Are there clothing and fabrics and garments in the estate in? And again, the answer is yes. Ihachi hachi kamaluchu. So Rabbi Bana says, okay, this is what Dad meant as part of his tzava. How gavad deshame? I'm sorry. That's the end of that maysa. So in other words, basically Rabbi Bana says that your father was speaking in code, and I'm decoding, right? The jug of earth means that one of the sons is going to get the property. The jug of bones, meaning that that son is going to be receiving the livestock. And the jug of fabric, meaning that that son is going to be receiving basically all the garments and the clothing. How will govern Deshamla Devasayo Deka Armala Barta? So there was a man who overheard his wife speaking to the daughter and said, Amai lots tenisi bi isura. So why aren't you a little bit more modest as you are committing averus? Okay, so in other words, the daughter apparently did not behave in a faithful way. It sounds like she was involved in some sort of infidelity. And mom basically is giving a little bit of mussar to the daughter, but not that much mussar. And basically mom says to the daughter, look, just be a little bit more private about it. Meaning, okay, infidelity, fine, but you should be a little more discreet. Okay. Right. But as we'll see in the story, we'll understand a lot better why mom doesn't give even better mussar, much better mussar, which is, you should be faithful. Okay. So, Hach Issa, that woman, now this is mom continuing to explain to her daughter, such a great mother-daughter conversation. Mom says to that daughter, you know that woman. Now that woman, the Gemara always speaks in third person when a person's talking about themselves, but not in a flattering way. So she says, that woman, meaning referencing herself, Asara bini Isla, you know, I've got 10 sons. But you know, of my 10 sons, only one of them really belongs to your father. So in other words, I'm also unfaithful. But at least I'm discreet about it. So now you understand a lot better why mom's mussar to her daughter is, you know, you should at least be a little bit more discreet about the fact that you're unfaithful. I'm discreet about it, even though of course I'm unfaithful. Now the man overheard his wife say that. So in other words, obviously it must have been unbelievably deflating, but at the same time now he understood that of his 10 sons that he has, only really he doesn't have 10 sons. He really only has one son. And the others are not his children. So, Amalahu. So now, as he makes his preparations for his death, and as he says planning his estate, he says, "Kol nichsei lechad bara." So he says, all my estate is only going to one of my sons. Quite frankly, it's really the only son that he has. So that's the son that's going to get it. But lo yadaluhu minayu, so lahay minayu. But he didn't explain which one it is, and he died. And now it's just a question of ascertaining which one is his actual son. Also coming to Rabbi Bana. So again, on the daf in Shas that's dedicated to Rabbi Bana. So who comes in on today's daf? It's going to be Rabbi Bana. And Amar lahu zil chavute kiver davuchan ad dekai umegala lechu. Lahai minaychu. Okay, so basically he says, okay, here's what you're going to do. Rabbi Bana says to all the sons, now this is Solomonic in thinking. He says to the sons, here's what you're going to do. It's very simple. You're going to go to your father's grave and you're going to bang on the kever. And every one of you is going to bang on the kever. And then what's going to happen is that dad's going to come out and dad's going to explain who in fact is the one son who is going to inherit the entire estate. So, how can the father be sure? I don't know. I was going to say, if he overheard that line that his wife said to his daughter, so I'm guessing that he must have overheard other things as well. So shavku azlu kulu. So and everyone goes down and start banging on the kever like Rabbi Banau told them to do. Okay, he gave them all an eitzah. But how debrei hava lo azal? But the son, the actual son, the biological son, so of course he wouldn't hit on the kever of his father. That's not kibbutz. That's certainly not the way to honor your father. The Gemara in Kiddushin says the mitzvah of kibbutz applies both when you're alive and when you're dead as well. So and after the father dies, so the son's not going to hit on the kever of his father. So amar lahu kulu nichsei dahai. So Rabbi Banam says, okay, now I know who the son is. The actual son is the one who didn't hit on the grave of his father, meaning that is proof positive that in fact was the actual biological son. Azlu achlu kurtza beimalka. Now the other nine, of course, were very upset. They were actually called out, meaning they knew that they were not the biological children, but at the same time, they were all looking to cash in as part of the estate, and they all lost, and they're all upset with Rabbi Bana, who smoked them out. And so what do? They tell Lashon Hara to the government about Rabbi Bana. Okay, the expression, Achlu Kurtza, you're going to hear that again and again throughout Shas. It basically is a way of saying that they spoke Lashon Hara about him. Amri Ika Gavra Chad B'Yudai Dekam Mafik Mamona Mi'anshe B'lo Sahadei U'V'lo Midi. So what do they tell the government? Actually, they tell the government something which is factual. They're right. Meaning, here's a guy without evidence, without witnesses, so he takes money away from people. Meaning, we stood to inherit our father, and he now, with a little bit of, of detective work, but no witnesses and no verification, so he took the money away from us, and he gave it to one of the sons. Okay. Yeah, that's... I kind of was afraid of that question, meaning because it's a fair question. Yeah. In other words, it was hearsay on the part of the father who heard that, what his wife said. And you're right. I don't know the answer. Just it's an admission on my part.
In the language of the Gemara, does it actually vilify the other sons?
No.
Kind of reading into it.
No.
This is part like they did the right thing. They didn't know who they were. They were
right. In other words, given the little information that we know, I'm in agreement. Meaning, they, from their standpoint, like in other words, they grew up in the house and they assumed that they were the kids, and it was a comment made by the mother, to the daughter, Lefi Tumo. Okay, these are, I think they're valid questions.
The same, but the language of the Gemara doesn't lead you to believe that.
Right. In other words, the Gemara, in the context of our Gemara in today's daf, it's obviously praising Rabbi Bana in terms of you know what he was able to do.
Right.
Okay.
I think it's the same thing as Shlomo
HaMelech. Right. No. I said it's Solomonic. Yeah. No. It's that kind of. But here, though, with
Malach is over a lot.
Right. In other words, but here, though, you're really... Meaning, the kids are right. Meaning, you took money away based on the investigative work. And we don't have any... In other words, the test over here wasn't, it wasn't, what we would call DNA testing. Meaning, it's just a behavior. And one son behaved differently than the other sons. Okay. Meaning, he's right, but I'm going to take money away because of a behavior? Okay. But that's what he did. So they told the government about this Rabbi Bana, what he does, and so they took Rabbi Bana and they threw him into jail. Azal Divasayim. Now, the wife of Rabbi Bana comes. Now, Rabbi Bana is very smart, as we're going to see in just a moment. His wife also was very smart. And so what she's going to do now is that she basically is going to hatch a plan in terms of getting him out of jail. And here's what she does. Amar Lahu. So now the wife comes into the authorities, and she tells them a story which at face value makes absolutely no sense. Now, she doesn't identify herself as being the wife of Rabbi Bana. And that's important, and you'll see why in just a second. So, Amar Lahu Avda Chad Havali, I have one slave. And Paschal Aresha, and what they did is that they chopped off the head of Paschal Amashcha, and they skinned him. Va'achlu Bisra, they ate the meat, they ate his flesh. V'kamalu Be'mai, and they took the skin and they used it as basically a thermos bottle. U'mashku Be'le Chavre, and they all drank from it. V'lo Kayavi L'demei V'lo Agre. And I didn't get paid, there was no rental fee. Okay, so this is how this is the story she's telling about her slave. Now, Lo Yadai Mai Ka'amra. Now they're looking at her and they just simply don't understand. Meaning accusations of both cannibalism and desecration of the dead, and this is what she's talking about. And they're looking at her like, "What are you talking about?" So Amar Lahu. So she says to them, "Amre Naisi Lachakima Diudai Valema." So she says, "Well, I'll tell you what. You guys don't understand me, but I know that in jail right now resides this old wise Jew. Go ask him if he understands what I'm talking about, and you'll see." Right? So the story reminiscent of Yosef HaTzadik, where basically they need his chachma, and she knows that they need his chachma, and she basically constructs a situation in which they're going to have to take him out of jail so that they can use his chachma. So Kayula Rabbi Bana, so they called him out, Amar Lahu, and he says to them, and he says, "Oh, I totally understand." What he also understood, of course, is that's his wife, and all this was a great plot in her point to get him out of jail. But he says, Zarnuka Amar Lahu. So he says, "Oh, you know what? She wasn't talking about her slave. She was talking about a flax of hide, meaning that it was a goat that she was describing, not a slave. Just in English, so we refer to a baby goat as a kid. So in English, it actually, you can understand the confusion of language. Again, I'm talking about the English language right now. But at least you have that idea that, you know, you could be describing a kid and you'd be like, what are you talking about? Right, a child? No, a baby goat. So there, as well, he explains she wasn't talking about a person. She was talking about an actual goat. So, Amri hol v'chacham kulihai. So in other words, so basically, he resolved everything with just a very simple change of interpretation. She was talking about a goat. Now they all understood what she was talking about. Wonderful. Hol v'chacham kulihai. Look, now they realize this Jew is really smart. Leis of Ababa. So let him sit by the gate. The gate, remember, is always the description of basically the courthouse. V'nidon dina. And let him judge cases. Meaning, really, it's a waste for him to be sitting in jail. So he should be adjudicating. So they moved him up. Okay, just like Yosef. So Chazad Uksiv Ba'avula. Now, as he was moving positions from sitting in jail to now sitting on the bench. So he goes into the courtroom and he notices over the doorway of the courtroom, right? In other words, you have this in, you know, big institutions, we're basically in the courthouse where they have they quote a line which basically is like a mission statement. So he looks up over the doorway and he looks at their mission statement. It's not really a mission statement, but it writes as follows: Kol dayin demitakri ledin lo shmei dayin. So if you have a judge who is charged for some sort of offense himself, so he's not a judge. So in other words, basically, it was a statement trying to convey the idea that our judges are honest, and anytime we have any judge who's charged with anything, immediately we remove him from the bench. Now, it's good, but the problem, of course, is that it's really too fundamental. Meaning, Amar Lahu, Rabbi Bana says, Ela me'ata, asa inish me'ama. So he says, now, what's going to happen is that let's say a person is brought to court and he's tried for some sort of charge. And what's going to happen? Top now of Nun Chesam and Beis. Umazmin Ladina. Right, and he's taken to court. So Pasley. So what he's going to do now is he's going to look at that judge and say, oh, you know, that's that judge did X, Y, and Z. Meaning I'm charging that judge, and by doing so, basically now based on your the bar that you set, so now that you're going to basically remove him from the bench because he was charged by somebody. So basically what Rabbi Banaz is explaining to the judicial system, their judicial system, is it's really too fundamental. Just because somebody gets charged does not mean that he should be disbarred or removed from the bench, but rather what you really need is a conviction before you remove somebody from the bench. So Ella called Dain Dimitakri Ladin Umafkin Mine Mamona Bedin Lashme Dayan. So he says, here's what you should really say, is that if a judge is brought to court and money was taken away from him because he unlawfully took money from somebody else, then that judge should be removed from the bench. So Kisvahachi. So the Gemara says, okay, so that's in fact, they actually wrote an addendum underneath, you know, their big mission statement, then they wrote an addendum. It's funny, what they didn't do is they didn't erase the original statement. they kept it, but then they wrote the following addendum. Baram, Sabadi Uadai Amre, however, in other words, they added this underneath the line, and that is, however, the elderly Jew said, that's a reference to Rabbi Bana, Amre called Dayan de Metakul Adin Amafke Mine Mamona Bedin Lashme Dayan. Okay, so they basically added his addendum to the plaque that is directly over the entrance of the court. Chazadiksiv, another thing that it says, now I don't know where this was written, but I guess over the doctor's office, maybe, I don't know. Anyway, Barosh kol Musa ana dam, and Barosh kol Chuyin ana chemar. At the head of every death is blood, and at the head of everything alive is wine. Okay, now, again, it's a very fundamental statement, too fundamental, and the Rashbam explains. At the head of every death is blood. Rosh l'chol amisos hidam she'in adam meis ela al yedei rov dam shalowi kiz bizman haroi lo. Okay, back then, medicine was very fixated on blood, and on too much blood, and accumulation of blood, which is why, back in the good old days, bloodletting was extraordinarily popular. It was general therapy that was applied to somebody. And if you don't release, I'm not giving you medical advice, I'm explaining how the thought process went. If you don't express blood, if you don't release a certain amount of blood, so it's going to create an imbalance, and the person's going to die. So therefore, the way the statement is phrased is that when somebody dies, it's because there was too much blood. Period. That was sentence number one. Sentence number two, what about wine? If you don't drink wine, I'm sorry, healthy people drink wine. Bereish kol chayin ana chemar. The next Rashbam, shayayin mechaye kol shosav. Wine is life. And if you drink wine, so then you're going to go on living. Okay, so again, Rabbi Bana is bothered by the fact that the statement is really too fundamental and has no nuance. And what he does is he provides a little more nuance to the statement. So, Elamiata. So this is Rabbi Bana's comment. Denafal meigro omeis, v'denafal midiklo omeis. Somebody falls off a roof and dies. Somebody falls from a tree and dies. So dama katle. So is it the blood that killed him? Obviously not. Meaning you can't attribute every single death to too much blood. People die for other reasons. So that's his first comment. His second comment. Visu minde derecheha lememes mashke lechamra v'chaye. If somebody's on his way to die and you give him some wine, do you think he's going to live? No. So el ahachi by lemechtev. So once again, he adds a little bit of nuance and he wants to make the following addendum to the statement, which is barosh kol marin anadam and barosh kol asvan anachemar. In terms of what gets people sick, at the beginning of every illness is too much blood, and at the beginning of every medicinal treatment is going to be wine. So, in other words, again, a little more nuanced in idea is that, yeah, if somebody is going to become sick, it's because an imbalance in blood. If someone is going to get healed, and the way the Rashbam explains this is that before we move on to medicines and therapies and anything else, basically, if the person's drinking a portioned amount of wine every day, so he's not going to need any other type of medicine. So they are for Kisvahachi. And once again, on the statement, on this mission statement, so they wrote the addendum actually down. Baram, however, Sabit Yehudai Amrei, Berosh Kalmar, Nanadam, Berosh Kalas, Vamana Chemar. Fine. So they added his addendum to the mission statement. Okay. Ba'asa Deleis Chemar, Taman Mitbu Simanim. And if you don't have wine, eventually you're going to have to use other types of medicines. Meaning, wine really is the elixir. It's the way to keep people from getting sick. But in the place where you don't have wine, so then you're going to have to use some sort of other medicines and other therapies. Okay. Ksiva Pischa de Kaputkia. Now, the following was written on the entrance of Kaputkia. Kaputkia is modern day Turkey, and the following was written. It was an encryption of three words. Anpak, Angav, Antal. Okay, now what does that mean? So, it's the Rishonim debate. I'm going to just present today the Rashbam. If you want more information, you can take a look at Tosos. He argues on the Rashbam. But I'm just going to present the Rashbam. The Rashbam writes, Ksiva Pizcha de Kaputkia. So, Milsa Abapi Nafshehi. I'm reading the Rashbam. So, the Rashbam points out that this statement on the entrance of the building in Kaputkia, it's independent of what we saw previously, meaning this doesn't have anything to do with Rabbi Bana. We basically closed the chapter in the Gemara on Rabbi Bana. And basically, just other things that are written on the doorways to explain to people, and that is, the way the Rashbam understands it, is that these three measurements are all the same measurement. Meaning, so that you should know that when you're out in the market, and somebody cites to you, Antpak, so you know that that's the same measurement as Angav, and that of Antal. Of Antal. Sheim hisna limkor lechaver malo mida zuba ezel lashon shiyomer yitain shir echad. Umekomus yeshe shakarin anpak o antal angav. In other words, basically you want to tell the buyers these are all the same measurements, so that there is more information for the buyer, so that the buyer doesn't get taken advantage of. Ukedame begedushin lishtemar angava amalei misani mar aspargas kedame inche o antal kedekar rabbanan. Meaning, in the Gemara in Kiddushin gives this idea that various communities called it different things. So basically, as a way of disseminating information to the public, so you had this written on top of the markets, so that people knew that it was all the same measurement. Okay. Ezu Antal, just finishing up till we get to the next Mishnah. So the Gemara says, what is Antal? Zeu Revius Shel Torah. That is the measurement of a Revius, what we would call a Revius of a log. Okay. It's called, the Gemara refers to it as Revius Shel Torah. Right? As we are now past Purim and approaching Pesach, the Rashbam is extraordinarily timely. The Rashbam writes, Revius Shel Torah. Revius Alog Dehainu Beitzo Mechsa. So it is a quarter of a log, which is in measurement an egg and a half. Omishum. Now, why is it called Revius Shel Torah? Omishum da arba kosos shel Pesach shiran b'revius. Now, the dalakosos that we are required to drink on Pesach, the measurement of each cup has to be a minimum of a revius. Umatzolem chachamim smach min haTorah. Now, where does it come from? The answer is, it doesn't. Meaning, there is no mitzvah of the Torah to drink four cups of wine on Pesach. It is a mitzvah derabbanan. But what the Chachamim did is they found a smach, a reference in the Torah to these four cups. Notably, now this is a Rashbam that we're learning here in Baba Basra. It's a match to the Rashbam in the beginning of Pesachim, in the 10th parak of Pesachim, where the Rashbam over there goes on to explain that the four cups of wine that we drink on Pesach has to do with the Dal Lashon Shel Geula. So if you now are just, I'm reading in the Rashbam over here, it's a perfect match. Midal Kosas Amorim B'Mitzrayim, Midal Lashon Shel Geula, Amorim B'Parsha, B'Parshas V'Ahut Seisi, V'Galta V'Lakachta V'Avesi. Okay. The gears on the side change, fixes up the language a little bit. Lefichach karele revi'ah shel Torah, and that's why it's called the revi'ah shel Torah. V'chein revi'ah shel yayin lenazir halach l'moshe mi'sinai. Okay, and we also know that a nazir can't drink wine. How much? A revi'ah, and that's halach l'moshe mi'sinai. Okay. And he quotes also the Gemara Nazir as well. In the meantime, however, just another interesting aside. I think this is generally common knowledge. We know that there's a mitzvah to drink four cups of wine on Pesach. The Mishnah in Psachim, the 10th Perek, basically is principled on that. Meaning from the 10th Perek standpoint, which is a description of the Seder, the entire Perek really is the backbone of the entire perek is the four cups of wine. Meaning, here's what happens to the first cup of wine, here's what happens to the second cup of wine. Meaning, we look at the Seder as, you know, the 15 steps of the Seder, right? That's how we, you know, that's how we teach the kids. And, you know, that's, our Seder is based on Kadesh, Orchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, etc., etc. But from the Mishnah standpoint, the four cups of wine are really the backbone for the entire Seder. So what's interesting, at least, you know, as a general comment, is that neither the Mishnah nor the Gemara ever is bothered by how do we know, where does it come from that there's a mitzvah to drink four cups of wine? Meaning, where does it come from? The Gemara never tells us where it comes from. It's so the Rashbam in Baba Basra and Daf Nun Ches Amud Beis, meaning the Rashbam we just learned together, and the Rashbam in the beginning of the 10th Perek, so they say it comes from the Dal Lashon Shel Geula. It's based on the Yerushalmi, meaning the Yerushalmi talks about this, and by the way, parenthetically, I don't know the Yerushalmi gives a number of other explanations in terms of where it comes from, but the Gemara Bavli never brings it up. I know, I also think it's interesting. It's just, you know, it's here's the mitzvah, do it, and the Bavli never says why. Okay. I mean, the Rashbam here, the Rashbam in Pesachim. But in other words, but the Yerushalmi, they're getting it from the Yerushalmi. So
it's consistent with the concept of wine being life and
Geulah. Yes, right, exactly. Exactly, right. It fits in nicely with our Gemara here. Okay, we're back to the Mishnah. We're talking once again about rights and usages of your items and other people's property. Here we talk about the gutter. Okay, especially in the houses that we live in, where they're literally, not literally, but they're on top of one another, right? I live in a development, thank God, Baruch Hashem, where, you know, one person's property is like literally the wall of the next person's property. So you have this all the time, where you have basically rainwater running off of one person's house and going onto somebody else's property. And the Mishnah describes that. The Mishnah discusses that. So Harmar Zev ain lo chazaka v'yeshlam kama chazaka. So as far as the Mar Zev is concerned, now the Mar Zev is basically a drain pipe that comes off the gutter, meaning that on the roof they had a long gutter going from end to end, and then obviously you need to drain that water, otherwise the gutter is just going to collect the water, and that doesn't do anything, it needs a drain. So there was a drain pipe, and that drain pipe is called the Marzev. As you will see, as the Gemara is going to describe, that there was flexibility with the Marzev, meaning the drain pipe didn't have an absolute place that it had to go on the gutter, it could be moved around on the gutter. So the Marzev, for that there's a chazakah. Meaning, again, we go back to the point that I made yesterday, that as long as I've had my gutter and my drain pipe being used for, now the Rashbam here says, like he said in yesterday's daf, the Rashbam is very consistent about this point, 3 years. In other words, we're not talking about occupying in terms of ownership, we're just talking about rights of usage. But as long as I've been doing it so for 3 years, so then I can now say, look, you know, to your neighbor, this has been going on for a long time. My water has been draining onto your property for a long time. So now when all said and done, you know, you're stuck with it. Meaning because I have now established my rights and my usage. Hamarzev en lo chazaka. So the marzev itself doesn't have a chazaka, but yesh mekamo chazaka. But the place has a chazaka. Now that first line in the Mishnah obviously is very confusing. Do you have a chazaka with your marzev? The Mishnah says no, and then the Mishnah says yes. Okay, so if at this point in time you're confused, you should be, because the Mishnah gives conflicting reports. The Gemara obviously is sensitive to that. And when we start with the Gemara in just a moment, the Gemara is going to try to resolve the discrepancy in that first line of the Mishnah. Hamazchila yesh lechazaka. The mazchila, so this is a much larger pipe. It goes over the length of the entire roof, and it is an established thing, and therefore there is a chazaka when it comes to the mazchila. As opposed to the marzev is just simply the drain pipe. Sulam ha-mitzriyan lo chazaka. If I set up a ladder on my neighbor's property, and it's been there for a long time, it's not, doesn't have a chazaka. The Rashman points out over here, the basic idea behind all these examples in the Mishnah is that if it's something big and permanent, and I put it down in your property, and it's been in your property for some time, so, and again, according to the Rashman, 3 years, so therefore I've established my rights of usage. If it's something small and temporary, and even though it's been in your property for some time, that doesn't establish a chazaka. So, the Sulam HaMitzri, the Egyptian ladder, is small and temporary. So, therefore, it doesn't establish a chazaka. Ulatzuri yesh lo chazaka. However, if it is a nice Tyrian ladder, so it's big, and therefore it does establish a chazaka. Chalon HaMitzri sein lo chazaka. The Egyptian window does not have a chazaka. It is very small. Its usages are very limited. The Rashbam over here goes into detail. I'm not going to go through the Rashbam right now, but see inside. Ulatzuris yesh lo chazaka. But if it's a Tyrian window, so that is significant, and therefore, if I've used it for some time, it's going to have a chazaka. We'll talk more tomorrow about windows. An Egyptian window is one that's so small that you can't even fit your head through the window. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Yesh Lo Malbein. If the window has a frame, a framed window, even though it's small and even though your head can't go through, nevertheless is permanent and therefore is going to establish a chazaka. Okay, let's finish off today's daf with the following. The Gemara starts off, Maya Marzevan lo chazaka v'yishlam kama chazaka. Let's talk about that drain pipe. So the Mishnah obviously is confusing. The Mishnah says the drain pipe does have a chazaka, and the Mishnah says it does not have a chazaka. Which one is it? So Amar Rav Yehuda, the Gemara is going to give three answers, and they don't necessarily disagree with one another. It's just basically three different approaches. Okay, Nimuka Yosef, the Rif, the Rambam, they all say that it's just different approaches, but not that the answers are objecting to one another. I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Shmuel Hachi Kamar, I'm Marzev Enlo Chazaka, Miruch Achas, V'yesh Mekomo Chazaka Mishtei Ruchos. Meaning, if I'm on the receiving end of the drain pipe, so I can say to my neighbor as follows, look, the drain pipe can be moved around. I can't tell you to take off the drain pipe, meaning you have to have some sort of drainage of your gutter, but what I can tell you to do is move it to the other side. That's one approach. A second approach, Rabbi Chanina Amar, Hamar zeven lo chazak shim haya aruch mekatsro, v'yeshem kama chazak shim bala okro, eno okro. I can tell my neighbor, look, if your drain pipe is too long, meaning it's going too far out into my property, so I can tell you to cut it, but I can't tell you to remove it altogether. And finally, the third answer of Yirmiyah Bar Abba Amar Amar Zevein Lo Chazak Hashim Rotsa Livnos Tachtav Bone V'yishim Kama Chazak Hashim Bala Okro Eno Okro. The Marzev has a chazaka in that once my neighbor has an established drain pipe, it's there. But he can't stop me from building something underneath it. Meaning he doesn't get the airspace. Right? Even though water is going to be going down, but that doesn't mean that he gets that airspace. That airspace still belongs to me. So he has a right to have his drain pipe, but he does not, by virtue of that, get the airspace underneath. Those are three different approaches to understand how to understand the Mishnah, but basically it all speaks to the same idea. My neighbor has a right to have a drain pipe that drains his gutters, but in terms of a detail, I can either A, tell him which, I can tell him A, either which side to put it on, B, to shorten it, it's too long, or C, he doesn't get the airspace underneath. Okay, that's how the Gemara understands the Mishnah. We stop. Tomorrow we pick it up at the very top of Nun Tes Amud Aleph.